Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Monday, April 6, 2020. Coming up this hour.
Global stocks gain as the White House sees signs of the COVID-19 outbreak stabilizing.
Infections in Italy and Spain also slow, stoking hopes of a plateau in Europe.
Global fatalities approach 70,000 as infections near 1.3 million.
As New York City turned the corner in the fight against the coronavirus. Plus, Joe Biden likes the idea of a virtual Democratic National Convention. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stanshaw in sports. NFL Hall of Famer Bobby Mitchell has passed away, and so has, from coronavirus, record-setting kicker Tom Dempsey.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak on Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
And good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Amy Morris. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Interactive Brokers. Take the bond challenge by using the free IBKR bond scanner to compare available yields against those of your broker. Learn more at ibkr.com/bonds.
And U.S. futures are climbing to start the week. 6:01 on Wall Street. I mean, check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 96 points this morning. Dow futures up 814. NASDAQ futures up 308. The DAX in Germany is up 4.5%. The CAC in Paris up 3.7%. And the FTSE 100 up 2.2%. 10-year Treasury down 22 32nds, yield 0.66%. And the yield on the 2-year, 0.26%. NYMEX crude oil is down 3.1% or 87 cents at $27.47 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 1.2%, up $18.90 at $16.64.60 an ounce, and the euro 1.0815 against the dollar. Amy.
Karen, the White House sees signs of the COVID-19 outbreak stabilizing. President Trump points to a reduction of daily fatalities in New York as a sign the spread could be leveling off.
Some very good things are happening in New York. The first time where the deaths were less from the previous day. That's the first drop so far. So maybe that's a good sign. It could be. And the hospital levels are starting to perhaps decrease.
New York State reported 594 deaths yesterday, a reduction of 36 from the prior day. Infections in the state now number 123,000.
And we hope we're seeing a leveling off in the hottest spots of them all. So we'll see. You'll be seeing that over the next few days. Let's see what happens.
Vice President Mike Pence also notes sign of progress, saying he sees cases, deaths, and hospitalizations starting to stabilize.
At the same time, though, it's expected to be a grim week for fatalities. White House health official Deborah Birx says projections show a surge in New York, Detroit, and Louisiana.
Healthdata.org, they're predicting in those three hot spots, all of them hitting together in the next 6 to 7 days.
Michigan has the third most infections after New York and New Jersey. California is fourth and Louisiana is fifth. Deaths in the U.S. are poised to eclipse 10,000 as soon as today.
We're very hopeful that over the next week, although we'll see rising number of cases of people who lose their lives to this illness, we're also hopeful to see a stabilization of cases across these large metro areas where the outbreak began several weeks ago.
Overall, Birx says projections call for about 100,000 total deaths across the country.
Deaths worldwide, meantime, are now nearing 70,000. Let's get the very latest numbers now live from Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Amy. Confirmed COVID-19 cases worldwide are almost 1.3 million. The U.S. leads the way with more than 330,000 infections. Projections for total fatalities in America reach as high as 240,000. Though social distancing measures are lowering projections in some forecasts. And that has billionaire philanthropist Bill Gates calling for a nationwide lockdown. He appeared on Fox News Sunday, heard right here on Bloomberg Radio.
If we do the social distancing properly, we should be able to get out of this with a death number well short of that. It's very important that those numbers are out there because a lot of people are still thinking, hey, isn't life normal? Not waking up every day to a completely new reality.
Gates believes lockdowns in all 50 states could result in a death toll short of 100,000. So far, at least 38 states and Washington, D.C. have issued stay-at-home orders. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, John, thank you. Meantime, in Europe, Italy and Spain remain hotspots for the virus, though new numbers show the outbreak starting to stabilize. And here with the very latest is Bloomberg's Maria Tadeo reporting from Brussels.
When you look at the number of people who need intensive care, the number of people who have unfortunately died, the number of new cases on a daily basis, all of those have declined. So it really does point that the worst for Italy is over at this stage. When you look at the situation in Spain, which is the other big focus point, the number of deaths did decline over the weekend, but not so the number of people needing intensive care. That data does show that there is a little bit of a lag compared to Italy. Now, the next stage here in this debate is when are we going to see these countries open up for business? The Italian Prime Minister yesterday said that he could not actually commit to a deadline, so this is not enough yet to return to normal business.
Italy and Spain have the most fatalities worldwide. Combined deaths in those countries number more than 29,000.
In the UK, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been hospitalized with COVID-19. It comes as Britain prepares for the worst of the outbreak. Let's get more from Bloomberg Opinion columnist Therese Raphael.
For now, Downing Street is suggesting this is completely precautionary and the Prime Minister is still in control, still in touch with his cabinet colleagues. And yet this does raise some questions about what happens if his condition worsens, if he's really unable to run things.
The UK just reported its deadliest day yet, with more than 680 fatalities. Projections show the worst of the outbreak coming to Britain in 7 to 10 days.
As we approach a global peak for the pandemic, stocks are rising around the world. We saw broad-based gains in Asia overnight. And for details, we're joined by Bloomberg's Juliet Sally in Singapore. Good morning, Juliet.
Good morning, Karen. Japan's Nikkei 225 index climbed 4.3% in Tokyo as the yen dropped. Prime Minister Abe is set to declare a state of emergency in the nation. In Seoul, the Kospi was up close to 4%. And here in Singapore, the market rose as the government unveiled a third coronavirus stimulus package, pledging more cash handouts. Hong Kong stocks also advanced while several markets in the region were closed for a holiday, including those in mainland China and India. In Singapore, Juliet Sali, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Juliet, thank you. And straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
Thank you, Karen. It's 6:07 on Wall Street. We bring in Michael Barr now to find out what else is going on in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio is warning that hospitals facing potentially the worst week in the coronavirus crisis still need ventilators as more doctors and nurses head to the region.
291 medical personnel from our military dedicated specifically to our public hospital system arriving now in New York City. That's 174 nurses, 104 doctors, 13 respiratory therapists. That's a very good start.
President Trump is expressing optimism in the fight against the coronavirus in New York. For the first time in the state Sunday, there were less deaths than in the previous day. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo said he was encouraged by the data, but that it's too early to tell if the state has turned a corner. The number of cases has now topped 122,000 in New York. Many people are asking how a tiger in New York City could get a COVID-19 test when it is still hard for so many people. The Wildlife Conservation Society said in a statement, a tiger at the Bronx Zoo has tested positive for the coronavirus. Dr. Paul Kelly, the Bronx Zoo's chief veterinarian, says the COVID-19 testing that was performed on the four-year-old female tiger was in a veterinary school lab and is not the same test used for people.
We were surprised, of course, because this is the first time a person has naturally infected an animal and an animal has gotten sick.
Three other tigers and three other lions also tested positive for the virus, but all are expected to recover. Former Vice President and Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden says the COVID-19 pandemic may change how the Democratic Party holds this summer's nominating convention. On ABC's This Week, Biden said the Democratic National Convention set to take place in Milwaukee may have to move online.
We have to do a virtual convention. I think we should be thinking about that right now. The idea of holding the convention is going to be necessary, but we may not be able to put 10, 20, 30,000 people in one place, and that's very possible.
ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on QuickTake by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy?
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 6:09 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy. The sports world has had plenty of coronavirus cases. Now, sadly, a fatality. Tom Dempsey was an NFL kicker. He was 73. He was known for a record-breaking field goal that he made in New Orleans in 1970.
Tom Dempsey will try to kick the longest field goal in National League history. They're sending it on with 2 seconds left. Scarpetti will hold. Here's a snap. The ball is down. Dempsey kicks. It's on the way. It is.
A 63-yarder stood alone as the longest field goal in NFL history for 28 years. It has since been surpassed, but Dempsey was quite a story. Born without fingers on his right hand and without toes on his right foot, he used a special shoe to kick straight on. Hall of Famer Bobby Mitchell has also passed away. He was 84, played running back in Cleveland with Jim Brown, and then traded to Washington, played wide receiver, became the Redskins' first African-American player. The PGA expected to announce today its schedule post-virus. So they aired WrestleMania last night, and Drew McIntyre defeated Brock Lesnar, which means that when Iona plays Minnesota next season in basketball, apparently the game will be played in New Rochelle. Hall of Famer Rick Pitino, new coach of the Gales, made a wager with his son, who coaches the Gophers, that whoever won the wrestling, that would determine who would host the game. Worth noting, not only are wrestling outcomes predetermined, it was shown last night on tape. The match actually took place several days ago. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports.
All right. Thank you, John. And in other sports news, you may one day see electric flying cars compete in Formula One style races. London's Telegraph reports an Australian company is helping develop electrical vertical takeoff and landing vehicles. The paper says if the technology enters widespread use, the sector could be worth $1.5 trillion by the year 2035. S&P futures are higher, so are the Dow futures. NASDAQ futures pointing higher as well. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. This is Bloomberg. 6:11 on Wall Street. Coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak, we'll learn more about what analysts are looking forward to. We'll speak with Jonathan Golub, the chief U.S. equity strategist at Credit Suisse. Futures are higher. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow. Stocks are jumping in Europe and Asia alongside U.S. stock index futures after the reported death tolls in some of the world's coronavirus hotspots showed signs of easing over the weekend. The dollar is edging higher. Treasuries are falling. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 94 points this morning. Dow futures up 792. NASDAQ futures up 303. The DAX in Germany is up 4.33%. 10-year Treasury down 21 32nds, yield 0.66%. The yield on the 2-year 0.25%. NYMEX crude oil is down 4% on $1.12 to $27.22 a barrel. COMEX gold up 1% or $17 to $16.62.60 an ounce. The euro 1.0810 against the dollar. British pound 1.2310 and the yen is at 109.19. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, are we beginning to see a glimmer of hope in the fight against the coronavirus? Bloomberg's John Tucker has more in this live report.
And Michael, the daily death toll from the novel coronavirus declined in some global hotspots. President Trump says he sees signs the U.S. outbreak is beginning to level off. New York State reported 594 new coronavirus deaths on Sunday, a reduction of 36 from Saturday. Governor Andrew Cuomo said in a daily briefing that the data may show the state is reaching a plateau or could be just a blip. Meantime, the U.S. military deploying 1,000 Air Force and Navy medical staff to New York City in the next 3 days. I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you very much, John. Britain assumed the unwelcome mantle of deadliest coronavirus hotspot in Europe after a record 24-hour jump in deaths that surpassed even hard-hit Italy's. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson was hospitalized yesterday, 10 days after testing positive for COVID-19 in what his office described as a precautionary step. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy?
All right, thank you, Michael. It's 6:20 on Wall Street. We're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios on Bloomberg Daybreak. President Trump has said he does believe that the coronavirus outbreak is starting to stabilize now in the U.S. Joining us to talk about this and much more, Jonathan Golub, Chief U.S. Equity Strategist at Credit Suisse. Jonathan, it's always a pleasure. I want to thank you for taking the time with us on this Monday morning. And we're seeing stocks higher today because of this optimism that is coming out of the White House. What's your reaction to the move in the markets, and do you think this is going to last?
Well, first, I love the optimism, and I hope that the president is right. Unfortunately, from a stock market perspective, I think that this is probably a little bit premature. We're optimistic that stocks will be higher in a year from now or 6 months from now, but we think over the near term, the market hasn't digested the fact that corporate profits are going to be down probably more than they expect, and GDP, according to the Bloomberg survey, is also going to be down more than people expect, especially in the second quarter.
So do you then maybe think there's more volatility that can be tagged to the president's more optimistic assessment, his comments?
Yeah, but I don't think the market's really trading the president's comments, right? At least I hope that's not the case. What we're trying to look at is, what are profits going to look like in the next quarter, the first quarter? What are they going to look like in the second quarter? Remember, in the first quarter of the year, January and February felt very normal. You had an expansion, and then you had things really fall off in the month of March. And right now, according to our work, corporate profits are going to be down by about 14% in that first quarter, which means March was really a doozy, and the expectations are that April and May are going to be weak as well.
You know, polls are showing that a lot of Americans believe when this is all over, things are going to change. You know, their view of the world, how the world operates, mindsets. How do you anticipate those sorts of attitudes changing among investors? What sort of mindset are you watching for?
You know, Amy, it's a great question, and it's one that we get all the time. So I think that there's one thing that we're learning here is that people are social beings. We like being around each other, and when we can't be, we're getting it in front of each other through FaceTime or Zoom or whatever that we're doing. But I think the real change is going to be the fact that we're going to be left with a very large budget deficit. The government is doing a huge amount of stimulus that's pushing down interest rates and the like, and those things have side effects later on, whether they be inflation or the need to pay back some of the money that's being spent here through higher taxes. So I do think there are going to be changes after the fact, but I'm not sure that it's that people are going to in some way fall in love with working from home on their couch.
So, but you would then be forecast. Well, that's true. You're forecasting, though, for stocks to be higher at the end of the year when all is said and done and as the dust starts to clear?
Well, sure, higher than they are right now. Our take is that it's probably going to take about 3 years to fully get back to where we were at all-time highs in terms of corporate profits, and that, you know, and this is not atypical of a recession. You have to work through this. People are going to lose their jobs. Businesses are going to be under pressure. But then you start this healing process, and those businesses get back on their feet. And the government, I think, has done an absolutely brilliant job of acting very, very rapidly to put out an aid package, which is bigger than anything that we've seen. And that's going to help the process along, but it will take some time. And in a couple of years from now, things are going to be back to probably where they were at the very beginning. But it's going to take something like that in terms of time frame.
Take a couple of years. In about 30 seconds, can you give us an idea of how you're advising your clients for now?
You know, I think the most important thing is to invest in companies that are a little bit more conservative, those that are that have lower debt burdens, those companies that have higher profit margins. If companies are running on thin profit margins, it's a little bit harder for them in a period where there's a bit of pressure. So stay in the stock market, but do it in companies that are a bit more safe and defensive is probably the best way to go.
All right, Jonathan Gollad, the Chief U.S. Equity Strategist at Credit Suisse. It's always a pleasure. Thank you very much for your insight and your time this morning. And let's look at the futures right now. S&P futures are higher, 3.6% higher. Dow futures up 3.6%. NASDAQ futures up almost 4% at 3.94%. COMEX gold, 1664 an ounce. The euro at 108 against the dollar. British pound, 123. Yen at 109.22. Still ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. Check more on the markets. Bringing you the latest news in business, economics, and finance. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by National Realty, NRIA developers of high-return income-producing properties for investor partners. See them at nria.net.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York.
Bloomberg 1130.
To Washington, D.C.
Bloomberg 991.
To Boston.
Bloomberg 1061.
To San Francisco.
Bloomberg 960.
To the country.
Sirius XM Channel 119.
And around the globe.
The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com.
This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
It's 6:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Amy Morris.
And I'm Karen Moscow. We're just about 3 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are gaining as the White House sees signs of the COVID-19 outbreak stabilizing. President Trump points to a reduction of daily fatalities in New York as a sign the spread could be leveling off.
Some very good things are happening in New York. The first time where the deaths were less from the previous day. That's the first drop so far. So maybe that's a good sign. It could be. And the hospital levels are starting to perhaps decrease.
At the same time, though, it is expected to be a grim week for fatalities. White House health official Deborah Birx says projections show a surge in New York, Detroit, and Louisiana.
Healthdata.org, they're predicting in those three hotspots, all of them hitting together in the next 6 to 7 days.
Deaths in the U.S. are poised to eclipse 10,000 as soon as today. And for the latest, we're joined live by Bloomberg's John Tucker. Good morning, John.
And good morning, Karen. There are more than 330,000 coronavirus cases in the U.S. New York State has the most infections and deaths, though fatalities do appear to be stabilizing. The state reported 594 deaths yesterday. That's a reduction of 36 from the prior day. Worldwide, there are 1.3 million cases of COVID-19. In Europe, deaths in Italy and Spain are falling. Italy reported its lowest fatalities in 2.5 weeks, while Spain saw a decline for the fourth straight day. In New York, I'm John Tucker, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right. Thank you, John. And in the UK, Prime Minister Boris Johnson has been hospitalized with COVID-19. Now, that comes as the UK reports its deadliest day with more than 680 fatalities. Projections show the worst of the outbreak coming to Britain in 7 to 10 days.
Oil is lower this morning, though off its worst levels of the session, there are signs that Russia and Saudi Arabia are making progress on a deal to curb output. Diplomats say there's been some movement over the weekend. Checking prices now, NYMEX crude oil is down 4% on $1.13 at $27.21 a barrel. Brent is down 3.5% at $32.92. Futures again moving higher. S&P futures up 90 points. Dow futures up 772. NASDAQ futures up 294. The 10-year Treasury down 22 30 seconds, yield 0.66%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.25%. The 30-year yield at 1.27%, and the euros at 1.0808 against the dollar. The yen at 109.23. Straight ahead, we have the latest world and national news, and this is Bloomberg.
6:33 on Wall Street. Let's bring in Michael Barr to tell us what else is going on in the world. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Amy. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo says it is too soon to say whether the pandemic has reached its apex and urged New Yorkers to remain vigilant. Meanwhile, hundreds of military medical personnel are being deployed in New York City. But Mayor Bill de Blasio warns that hospitals facing potentially the worst week in the coronavirus crisis still need more ventilators.
It doesn't end here. I'm going to go back to the president, to FEMA, to Department of Defense, and let them know we need a lot more help for our public hospitals as they continue to bear the brunt.
New Jersey has also been hard hit by the virus. Governor Phil Murphy.
This is the fight of our lives. None of us have gone through this before. We have to think of it that way. We have to treat it that way. It's nothing short of war, and it's no time to panic, but it is certainly likewise no time for business as usual.
New Jersey has nearly 38,000 cases. California's Riverside County has issued a new order in the fight against COVID-19. Bloomberg's Ed Baxter has the story.
Just days after recommending that people wear masks to prevent the spread of the coronavirus, Riverside now has gone a step further and has ordered all residents to cover their faces when leaving home as the number of infections and deaths continue to rise across California. Riverside is the state's fourth largest county, and the health director says not everybody's getting the message about social distancing while in public. So officials were forced to change from saying that you should to saying that you must. In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Former Vice President and Democratic presidential frontrunner Joe Biden says there should be changes to this year's Democratic convention due to the coronavirus. Biden on ABC's This Week.
We're going to have to do a convention, may have to do a virtual convention. I think we should be thinking about that right now.
The Democratic National Committee has already postponed the convention from July to August. ABC's This Week can be heard Sundays on Bloomberg Radio. The Taliban says their peace deal with the United States is nearing a breaking point. And the Taliban statement accused Washington of violations that include drone attacks on civilians. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Amy.
All right. Thank you, Michael. It is 6:35 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Sports Update. Here's John Stashower.
All right, Amy. Two former NFL players have passed away. Hall of Famer Bobby Mitchell was 84, played with Cleveland and Washington. And Tom Dempsey was 73. He died of coronavirus. He was living in a senior residence in New Orleans. That's where Dempsey became famous in 1970. Dempsey, who was born without toes on the right foot that he kicked with, booted a game-winning 63-yard field goal, longest ever. Record was held for 43 years. The Rangers are investigating an ugly incident. They just signed 20-year-old defenseman Keandre Miller, their 2018 first-round draft pick out of Minnesota. Miller is African-American. He held a Zoom chat Friday with about 150 people. The comment section was filled with racial epithets. Latest report on how and where baseball will be played upon its return is without fans and at spring training stadiums in Florida and or Arizona. Baseball players helping the cause include the Mets' Steven Matz, New York native, donating $32,000. He wears number 32. To New York City first responders and hospitals, Bryce Harper giving $500,000 to the effort in Philadelphia and his native Las Vegas, and Justin Verlander will donate his weekly paycheck. April 6th, this date in New York sports history, 1983. Opening day, Shea Stadium, and Tom Seaver returned to the Mets 6 years after that messy trade to Cincinnati. And Seaver was terrific, curled six scoreless innings against the Phillies lineup that day had five Hall of Famers in it, if you include Pete Rose. The Phillies also had Mike Schmidt, Joe Morgan, Tony Perez, and Steve Carlton. John Stashdale with Bloomberg Sports. Amy.
All right, thank you, John. And stocks are gaining this Monday morning after last week's 2% decline for the S&P 500. Mike Mullaney says it is time to buy. He is Director of Global Market Research at Boston Partners.
If your investment horizon is years and not months, you should be adding to positions in here. And that's exactly what we're doing back at my shop at Boston Partners. We're buying much more so than we're selling because there are indeed stocks and sectors that are on sale now and in some cases fire sales as compared to historical standards.
The worst hit industries this year include retail, travel, and oil and gas. Right now, S&P futures are 3.6% higher. Meantime, there is a laser focus on the economic impact from the COVID-19 outbreak and what that means for earnings. Let's get more on that now from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Analysts say it's next to impossible to make meaningful earnings projections given all of the uncertainty surrounding the pandemic. Patrick Palfrey is senior equity strategist at Credit Suisse Securities.
Right now, we believe the earnings need to adjust, and I think analysts need to make those calibrations. But ultimately, we see more downside. I think it's hard to understand fundamentals in an environment like this, but fundamentals are going to be the limiting factor for the market to move higher.
There is little in the way of U.S. earnings reports this week. We will be hearing from jeans maker Levi Strauss, PriceSmart, and WD-40. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, thank you, Charlie. It's 6:39 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Green Report. Here's Bob Moon.
Two environmental groups can proceed with a lawsuit aimed at blocking construction on President Trump's border wall with Mexico. The ruling by U.S. District Judge Trevor McFadden in Washington was largely a victory for the Center for Biological Diversity and the Rio Grande International Study Center, though several of the group's claims, including environmental ones, were thrown out. The judge also said they can't sue Trump personally. McFadden allowed the groups to continue with allegations under the Administrative Procedure Act, as well as claims that the administration exceeded its authority by tapping money for the wall that had been appropriated by Congress for other purposes. The suit and several others filed across the country challenged Trump's national emergency declaration. Trump did notch a win in July when the Supreme Court said he could use some military funds while the lawsuits were pending. McFadden ordered the government to respond to the remaining claims by April 16th, Thursday of next week. That's the Bloomberg Green Business Report. I'm Bob Moon.
Thank you, Bob. Other stories we are watching for you. Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway joining a record bonanza of corporate debt sales. The company is marketing yen-dominated bonds in multiple parts. The move comes after worldwide debt sales eclipsed a record $200 billion last week. Boeing will keep its Seattle-area airplane manufacturing hub closed indefinitely. The factories had been scheduled to reopen tomorrow night, but Washington state health officials are still trying to contain the coronavirus outbreak. Meantime, Boeing suppliers are showing signs of stress. Tesla has shown a ventilator prototype made from car components, according to a video from the company. That design includes a touchscreen computer and control system from a Model 3 car. There's been widespread shortage of ventilators needed for COVID-19 patients. Checking the markets now, S&P futures up 3.5%, Dow futures up 3.6%, NASDAQ futures up 3.84%, COMEX gold at $16.63 per ounce. Much more still to come on Bloomberg Daybreak. Stay with us. This is Bloomberg. 6:40 on Wall Street. Coming up on Bloomberg Daybreak, we'll talk with Brown University Political Science Chair Wendy Schiller about the president's optimism and the impact on the 2020 election. This is Bloomberg.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and on Quick Take by Bloomberg. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and futures this morning are on the rise and stocks are jumping in Europe and Asia after the reported death tolls in some of the world's coronavirus hotspots showed signs of easing over the weekend. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 93 points, Dow futures up 801, NASDAQ futures up 300. The DAX in Germany is up 4.5%. The 10-year Treasury down 20, 30 seconds, yield 0.65%, the yield on the 2-year 0.25%. NYMEX crude oil is down 4% or $1.12 to $27.22 a barrel. COMEX gold is up 1.1% or $17.10 at $16.62.80 an ounce. The euro, 1.0804 against the dollar, British pound 1.23, and the yen 109.21. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Americans are bracing for what the nation's top doctor warns would be the hardest and saddest week of their lives due to an expected wave of coronavirus deaths to come. Britain became the deadliest coronavirus hotspot in Europe after a record 24-hour jump in deaths that surpassed even hard-hit Italy's. UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is hospitalized. It happened 10 days after he tested positive for COVID-19 in what his office described as a precautionary step. There are glimmers of hope, though, for some hard-hit areas as the number of people dying appear to be slowing in New York City, Spain, and Italy. Leaders still caution that those gains could be reversed if strict lockdowns weren't followed. Global news, 24 hours a day, on air and on Quick Take by Bloomberg, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg Gaming.
All right. Thank you, Michael. And we're live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. It is 6:49 on Wall Street. Time now to check what is going on in D.C. Some of the top stories in our nation's capital include President Trump saying that he does see those signs that the coronavirus outbreak in the U.S. is starting to level off. As he says, more states have now been approved for major disaster declarations. This is Joe Biden says the party needs to consider a virtual nominating convention this summer. And in Congress, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi signaling that she is adjusting her agenda for the next coronavirus stimulus measure. Got a lot to get to. We're going to welcome back now Wendy Schiller, the chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Thanks so much, Wendy, for joining us on this Monday morning.
Good morning, Amy.
The president and the vice president both saying that they see the signs that the coronavirus outbreak in the U.S. is starting to level off, maybe stabilize based on what they're seeing in New York. There's still some more surges that are expected in other parts of the country, but what does that tell you?
Well, I mean, there's just this fine line that, you know, I think that they're trying to walk, which is to sort of not have everybody be in such despair that they can't stand the idea of this quarantine, they can't follow the rules, there's no end in sight. It's sort of human nature, right? And you got to give somebody an end point, you got to give them hope. However, we do know that there have been some states that are practicing a lot of the same measures but aren't in complete lockdown. We don't know what will happen in those states. We don't know how this reverbs. Like flying, for example, you know, would you fly on an airplane that's been in a state that doesn't have a lockdown in 6 weeks when they try to get the economy open again? Are people going to be willing to take those chances? And I think that's the new terrain. That's the new question mark. And that's, I think, where the administration wants to shift its focus. How do we come out of this? And how do we restart the economy in a safe way? And that's a really, really big puzzle that they're going to have to try to start to address.
Can they continue to walk that line while the president also positions himself as a wartime president? Just yesterday, while he was talking about the major disaster declaration for several states, he referred to this as an all-out military operation that is being waged.
Well, he wants to sort of embrace himself in the cloak of commander-in-chief, and that makes sense because he is the commander-in-chief. And he's trying to sort of, you know, make sure that people understand that he's in control. But the opposite messaging is coming from the governors all over the country who are saying that basically they have to fend for themselves, they have to compete against each other, and they're not getting the support from the federal government that they need. So these are competing themes every single day. So it's not a surprise that Trump wants to lean into the I'm in control, we've got it covered, and then versus all the governor's messages, which is the opposite.
And yet he seemed reluctant to fully embrace or invoke the Defense Production Act. States still competing with each other and with the federal government for safety gear, which kind of goes to your point about how the states and the White House are at this disconnect.
Yeah, they are. And he's waiting for, you know, private businesses to step up. For Amazon, for example, I think just announced it's going to ship masks or, you know, find a way to buy masks. And I think that that's he's leaning on corporations to say, listen, I can either come in heavy-handed or you can step up, one or the other, but don't make me come in heavy-handed. And I think that's really, and also Republicans have also totally reversed course, right? Now we've got payments out to people, we've got extended unemployment. These are things that Obama wanted to do in big numbers in the stimulus package and got opposed 10 years ago by the Republicans. So now they're just flipping the switch on their own party's platform, how far he can go. I mean, he's constrained in some ways by the Republican business community that doesn't want to see big government intrude in the way that a lot of other people do.
You know, speaking of flipping, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi also now signaling that she's changing her agenda and backing off some of the pressure on the upcoming stimulus measure, number four, saying that these additional direct payments to Americans would be a higher priority than, say, infrastructure, which is what she wanted to include.
I think it's just McConnell said no. I mean, I think McConnell has a way of saying no. He likes the word no, and he's effective at it. And he basically has said no, and there's, you know, there's no money. There's no money. I mean, we all want to get out of this. But $2 trillion on top of a $1 trillion deficit, when you obviously have revenues that are going to drop dramatically, you're going to have a massive deficit and a load on the federal debt that one wonders, is that sustainable? I mean, the markets may be getting better, but, you know, is it really sustainable? And what else has to get cut? Mm-hmm. And so there are still some diehard, you know, anti-spending Republicans that aren't going to want to see their party supporting such really big government spending.
So, wait, how would all of this then, the president's handling of this entirety, how would that impact the election?
Well, what's interesting is that his numbers, we talked about this last week and the week before, his numbers went up, but now they're sort of leveling off, right? They're going to go back to where they were in the sense of his approval rating will be in the mid-40s. And, you know, his approval rating of the COVID virus will go down as more people die, but it won't crater. And it'll be as tough as it was before. It's going to be a super tight race. You know, swing states are going to matter. The question is, how does Biden get a campaign up? I mean, that is the big advantage for the president versus the disadvantage of COVID, is that Biden's going to have to find a way to campaign in a virtual world, and that's not so easy to do, as he's already shown, that it's a little bit troubling. You know, how do you reach people? How do you connect without rallies? The president has a bully pulpit, but Biden's going to have to compete with that, and that is going to be a difficult task.
We only got about 30 seconds here, but is Biden then not relevant? Is this whole election going to hinge on the president's handling of this?
You know, we'll wait and see on the economy. I think the COVID virus will matter a great deal. Deaths will matter. But I think really when we come to September, October, November, do people find their jobs back? Are businesses restored? Or are we really slow on that? And is it really in a crisis? I think that's pretty much going to be the thing that decides the election.
A lot to watch there. Thank you, Wendy. Wendy Schiller is chair of the Political Science Department at Brown University. Read more about these stories on Bloomberg.com or on the Bloomberg Terminal. As a reminder, follow all of the latest on Bloomberg Radio in Washington on Bloomberg 99.1. Karen.
Amy, thank you. It is 6:55 on Wall Street. Time now for the Bloomberg Small Business Report with John Tucker. John, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. The coronavirus pandemic has hit the restaurant industry especially hard. Rails Steakhouse in Tewaco, New Jersey, no exception. They had to pivot quickly to a takeout-only model. And Mike Mulligan is director of operations there. Mike, tell us how that effort is going right now.
We're a steakhouse, and steakhouses generally don't do a lot of takeout because the product isn't suited toward, like, where fast food is. But, you know, we put a takeout program in place, and the community has been very, very supportive of it. But in truth, takeout's only a fraction of what our normal revenue would be. We're probably doing about 15% of our regular revenue.
How long can you sustain that?
We employed 105 employees. Right now I have about 14 employees on payroll to be able to take out. So it's kind of hard for them. And since we closed prior to a lot of the programs that are going into place, you know, they're eligible for unemployment at this time. And unemployment's been a little overwhelmed. I have a lot of employees that have been calling me and asking me for direction. And we've been obviously trying to help them and guide them through this process. But it's been a difficult one.
As a larger restaurant compared to your peers, do you have a cushion that can carry you on for more than just a few weeks?
We do. We can sustain this probably for several weeks. But again, it's difficult and cuts need to be made. We're still trying to work out the aid package and how we can benefit, as I think most restaurant companies are doing at this time. You know what, John? We started also, too, on Sunday, where we served 100 meals to the elderly and families who are in need within our communities. We're sending out 100 meals to the elderly and the financially challenged during this within our community. And we're going to be doing that every Sunday.
Oh, that's great.
Just a way to give back.
Yeah, that's great, Mike. Thank you. Mike Mulligan, Director of Operations for Rails Steakhouse in Tewaco, New Jersey. Thanks for joining us. And we're going to continue bringing you stories of small businesses working to stay afloat in this trying environment every day at this time, right here on Bloomberg Radio. I'm John Tucker, and that is your Bloomberg Small Business Report. Karen.
All right, John Tucker, thank you. We are hearing from J.P. Morgan Chase Chairman and CEO Jamie Dimon this morning in his annual letter to shareholders. He said J.P. Morgan earnings will be down meaningfully in 2020. He said coronavirus fallout will include a bad recession, and he expects financial stress to be similar to that of the 2008 financial crisis. And he also said a dividend cut is unlikely, would be only out of extreme prudence, and we'll continue to watch those headlines as they cross the Bloomberg. Right now, futures are higher. S&P futures up 96 points. Bloomberg surveillance straight ahead with Tom Keene, Jonathan Farrow, and Lisa Abramowitz. For Amy Morris, I'm Karen Moscow, and this is Bloomberg.